hailing frequencies are open. Welcome to the Infinite Potato Alliance.
Welcome to That Star Trek Podcast.
Are you out of your mind?
Watch and learn. This is going to be awesome.
This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek.
You are Starfleet to the core. I can smell it on you.
Join us as we dive into the newest content coming available, as well as retrospectives of the past series and films.
Do we need a mutiny today to prove who we are?
Now, on with the show.
We've only just begun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That Star Trek Podcast, your place for a detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek. My name is Sean Ray, and I just experienced full molecular engorgement in a matter of seconds, and it felt amazing. And I want to try something new tonight. Instead of the boring thing where I go around the circle and introduce everybody, I'm going to introduce each one of you and ask you a trivia question. And if you get the trivia question right, congratulations. If you don't, I'll just tell you the answer. So... Joining me tonight in the historic Infinite Potato Studios, we have Scott. How are you, sir?
We'll find out after this question.
The season one character Badgie is voiced by Jack McBrayer, who is well known in his other roles at Fix-It Felix and Wreck-It Ralph, and Kenneth Parcell in this hit sitcom starring Alec Baldwin.
I'm glad that you said Alec Baldwin, because I don't know the guy's name, Jack McBrayer. I don't know his character name in 30 Rock.
It is 30 Rock.
Because I've never watched it.
Also joining us tonight, we have Jen. How are you?
Live long and prosper.
Jessica McKenna pulls double duty on the Cerritos as she plays Ensign Barnes and this other character.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank. Sorry. Go ahead.
It's the ship's computer.
Oh, okay.
All right. And we also have Rick.
Zinda, his eyes red.
What is the registry number of the USS Cerritos?
Oh, you bastard. Oh, it's NCC. I have no clue.
75567.
Oh, so yeah. The Enterprise is the only ship whose registry number I know. I don't do, I love my trivia, but I don't do star dates and I don't do numbers. So,
All right.
I've got the registry number for Discovery memorized, but that's only because they layered in that possibly veiled reference to Section 31 when they, in the pilot episode, when they're trying to set it up as a Section 31 ship.
Yeah. Yeah. She's the 1031, but that's all right. I know two ships registry number.
There you go.
Well, seven, if you count all the Enterprises.
Tonight, we are going to be talking about the latest episode of Star Trek Lower Decks, which was titled The Spy Humongous. It was written by John Cochran and directed by Bob Suarez. And the IMDb description says, anomaly consolidation day on the USS Cerritos leaves the lower deckers with mixed emotions. Captain Freeman attempts to negotiate peace on the pack-led homeworld. All right. What did we think about this episode? Rick?
I enjoyed it. It wasn't the best one, but it wasn't the worst. I think it was the most Easter egg light episode they've done so far. There were only two that I counted, and they were pretty obvious. This is one that falls into the very sitcom-y category, but I guess because it's on a Star Trek episode, it didn't bother me so much. I'm really not sure where they're going with the pack leads. I kind of thought that they were going to do one thing and now they're going another. And there were a few things that bothered me in this episode, but overall it was fun. It was still enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a couple things to say about the pack list too, but we'll get to that in a minute. Jen, what'd you think?
Well, I mean, I'm actually liking that the pack legs are involved, but I mean, when we saw them originally on TNG, they were kind of a joke, is the best way to put it. So seeing them now on the show is, I mean, I think they're doing a little bit better with them, but they're still kind of a joke. It's the sitcom-y that Rick mentioned. Overall, I thought it was cute, and I agree. It was all right. It wasn't their best. But I mean, we still got some more season to go. So there you go.
Yeah. I think they decided to pick the least evil, or the least problematic bad guy, and make them the recurring bad guy for the show or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, Scott, what about you?
I'm kind of middle of the road on this one. I know that oftentimes I'm a little bit less favorable to a lot of Lower Decks episodes. Just because that's how I tend to be when it comes to comedy versus drama in sci-fi. This one, I watched it twice, which is unusual for me when prepping for these shows. But I had some time tonight while I was having dinner, so I decided to throw the episode on again. I gave another watch, and I think that might have helped me to look on it a bit more favorably, being able to review it. And now that I know what's coming, I can, you know, take it apart a little bit more in my mind. So I found some things that I liked a little bit more. And an added bonus of watching a second time is it allows me to practice one of my best known skills, which is making theories. I have theories.
Uh-oh.
Speculation.
See, this is why every time you say that you just like to go along with for the ride with a show, I'm like, no, you don't.
I do. This is maybe it's rare for someone to enjoy speculating and building up theories as much as I do. Yet at the same time, when the next episode starts, just going along for the ride, because I can, speaking for myself at least, when the show does not conform to the theories that I build up in my head, I don't get mad at the show.
No,
yeah, I just roll with it. I may say at the end of the episode, you know, if you'd done it my way, this would have been better, but I'm not mad about it.
No, but you have theories. You always have theories.
Yeah.
Well, we're on a speculation podcast, so we need theories.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing.
Yeah.
It's just the first time you said, I'm the guy that just likes to go along with the show and not think too much about it. And I'm like, no, that's me.
That's during the episode. Once the episode is over, that's when the theories start.
Oh, okay.
And this is all born from the part of me that, you know, the Scott that builds fantasies that next year when my birthday comes around, I'm going to find out that everyone has planned a surprise podcast birthday party where Alex Kurtzman comes on as a guest on the show. We have a nice conversation. And before we jump into a trivia contest with Alex Kurtzman, he says, you know what, guys, I have a special guest. And he brings on Mike McMahon, and it's Mike McMahon versus me in Star Trek trivia. And by the end of the episode, he offers me a job.
Now we have to cancel all of that. Thanks.
That's the Scott that comes up with all these theories. Is this the one that wants Mike McMahon to offer him a job?
Was this an episode of Fantasy Island that you were on? Or
smiles, no? Everybody.
Dip lane.
All right. Yeah, this was kind of a middle of the road episode for me. It was good. It was enjoyable. I didn't laugh out loud until the very end. But I did like that they kind of mixed up the grouping. You know, they had Boimler kind of off by himself doing something with other people, and then they had Mariner along with Rutherford and Tindy. But
Tindy finally got to talk.
Yes, yeah, that's true. But I just didn't think it was all that funny. I thought it had a few jokes that made me chuckle. that one scene at the end probably made the entire episode for me, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I did think it was funny that the command track cadets all call themselves red shirts. Cause I seem to remember Mariner making a red shirt joke in season one. So you would think the red shirt means something, but
well that's why Boimler went, really? You're calling yourselves that?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, why? No, never mind. So here's my problem with the Peklets. I just want to get this out of the way right away. You know, when we saw them on TNG, it was a joke. It was a, you know, let's be funny. Then they brought them back for mm-hmm. Lower Decks.
Yeah.
And then in this one, you know, we're starting to get more into the Peklet culture. And I really am starting to get mm-hmm. a bad taste in my mouth about them as an allegory for any variety of birth defects that involve cognition or mental function.
Oh, you're saying that they're making fun of people who
are
slow?
I don't think they're meaning to, but it's coming off as that. And I was halfway through the episode. I was like, all right. I even said to my wife, oh, I'll bet they're doing this with it. Cause you know, I never do this. So if it's something real that obvious for me to go, I'll bet they're doing this. I thought they were going to go with it's all an act and that the Peklets are actually a lot smarter than they let on. But then it turned out, no, they're just a planet full of idiots. And it's getting to the point of almost in bad taste to me. And yeah.
Okay.
And so it was funny for a while. Now I think it's tiptoeing right up to the edge of too far. I mean, I still well, laugh honestly, when Lundgar floated past the window. it's just, I think they need to really pull back on the whole Peklet thing.
Well, I mean, I was already tired of that whole shtick in TNG because they kind of went there and this was, you know, when were they on? Which season were they on? I can't remember.
Season two.
Okay.
That was the second season? Oh, wow. Yeah.
I got thinking it was Geordi much later.
Geordi in yellow, Riker with a beard, second season.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He makes things go.
Yeah. And we all make the you are smart, we are strong jokes. We have been for two decades now. But
this is making odd.
But it felt like poor taste back then, to me anyway. But again, that was, season two was 88.
Yeah, 89. That was the late 80s. This is 2021 and is a completely different mindset.
It still makes me shiver a little bit when LaForge walks onto the bridge and says, let me guess, the rubber band broke, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that the joke. I was going to basically say the same thing. So, I mean, I'll just add to it. I think that they're trying to just make them look as stupid as possible, but yeah, they're getting to the point where they're making them look mentally challenged, and mentally challenged does not mean stupid, you know.
No.
And so when you have somebody acting mentally challenged and then you start making fun of him like he just took a picture of his own shoes and you know stuff like that, you know, it does get a little bit cringy. Now, if they'd have made the Peklets on the planet kind of less smart than they are, but had the one, what was the guy's name that they had on the ship? The spy?
Rumdar.
Yeah. If they'd have made him a complete idiot or whatever, it would have been funnier. And just like he's dumber than the rest of them, but he's the one that they picked as their spy, you know, but they were all like, they kept saying my hat's not big enough for that. And then take you to somebody else whose hat is still not big enough for that. You know,
they're punching down and that's what disappoints me.
Yeah.
The downside of it is they are. And I'm sure that to a degree, it seems the appropriate move considering the medium, but they're making the Peklets cartoonishly dumb, which if you push it too far and if you portray it the wrong way, and a lot of this has to do with the writing, a lot of it has to do with the vocal performance of the actors playing the Peklets, you got to be careful or else it's going to become parody and possibly offensive. It's a high wire act to be sure. I have a suspicion though that close to what Rick said, but rather than finding out that they've been putting on an act this whole time and they're not in fact stupid, but they're secretly smart. I think I get the feeling that by the end of the season, they're going to continue becoming more of an antagonist, more of a threat. They just dropped a secret plan to try to smuggle a weapon of mass destruction to Earth. Mm-hmm. I think that they're going to follow that plot line. And in the climax of the season, when things get really hairy, it's going to turn out that the mental deficiencies or the intellectual deficiencies of the Packlets are going to somehow give them an advantage that the Federation will not be expecting. Starfleet is going to get caught flat-footed, and it's going to be a close call because they say, wow, they almost did this or that. How did that happen? Because we didn't think they'd be that stupid, or some variation of that.
Or they wouldn't be as dangerous as people thought. Something like that. Yeah.
they will somehow prove to be more of a threat than anyone gave them credit for, because everyone just assumed that they were all idiots.
Well, yeah. We also, it kind of messes with your canon a little bit when you make your people so stupid that they can't figure out how to work a camera and they can't figure out how to work the airlock. They don't know the difference between a bathroom and an airlock, but they know how to work spaceships.
That's always been the problem with the Packlets. They're portrayed as too stupid to be where they are.
Yeah. I get that all their technology is stolen, but you still have to know how to work that technology to use it. You know?
True.
Hopefully you're right, Scott. And by the end of the season, they'll have done something with it. But right now, I think that they're going too far with them. Mm-hmm. I won't say it wasn't funny. You know, my helmet isn't big enough for that. Well, my helmet is, you know, and I've got the biggest helmet and, you know, get to airlock 14. The Packlet did something unspeakable in there. Was one of the funniest lines in any episode ever. I'm 12.
The helmeted Packlets will no longer rule us. Ooh, I am now leader of Packlet people.
Yeah. I Star Trek is better than this. So hopefully they're leading up to something that's better than what this episode showed.
As I'm watching, I'm doing a rewatch of Rick and Morty season 3 because I haven't seen 4 and 5 yet, and I'm going to jump into those. But I wanted to go back and rewatch one season, play catch up, because Rick and Morty does so much, it's hard to keep things straight and remember what happened. And that kind of plays into the point, which is Mike McMahon, coming from Rick and Morty, tells me that a few of the a few of the methods that the show, that Rick and Morty as a show would use, is carefully, quietly laying seeds throughout a season. So when you get to the end of the season, something happens and you'll realize, oh, they've been pointing towards this all season long. We didn't necessarily see it because it was small aspects of various different stories. I think that he's going to be bringing something similar to Lower Decks, more so this season than last season. I think the Packlets are going to shape up to be a more serious concern for Starfleet. I suspect that Captain Freeman's growing quest for acknowledgement and accolades for herself, her ship, and her crew, I think that's going to start getting her into trouble. I think that Will Boimler is going to come back. I think they're going to be taking a lot of the threads and elements that we've seen so far. I think they're going to come back and play a role to one degree or another by the end of the season. Similar to What If. I think What If is going to be doing a lot of that too.
Mm-hmm. So the anomalies, were any of those anomalies Easter eggs that I missed? No. They were just all new things.
They were all just new stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I figured.
I thought maybe that sword might be something, but if it is, I don't remember. Because they got a lot of screen time. To me.
Dr. Who's the bird doctor? Doctor.
I can't remember his name, but yeah, Mowgli? Oh, that's whose quarter was the storybook.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Migli Moo or.
Yeah. It was something like that. Yeah.
Something Li Moo. If you look real close, it's not easy to pick out, but if you know to look for it, you'll see right about in the center of his big pile of junk when the door first opens, he's got a comm officer earpiece from TOS.
Really? I didn't see that. Wow.
I missed that.
There's a small Uhura's earpiece laying in the middle there.
Oh, cool.
So they're cleaning out anomalies, which are like these specimens that they've encountered over time, and it's time to clean them out, I guess. And Rutherford blows up like the little kid in the Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory, and Tendy gets turned into a scorpion thing.
Can I just say, and maybe this is just me, but even as a giant mutated scorpion monster, she was still adorable and looked a lot like a My Little Pony.
Really? Okay.
Something about the face. I was just like, even as a monster, she's cute.
One thing that that bothered me a little bit was that the cadets on the command track, they're looking down on people.
They're ensigns.
Well, okay. They're looking down on people that have the same rank as them, saying we are Starfleet and they work for Starfleet, you know, that kind of thing. And I get that they did that so that their leader can kind of get his comeuppance at the end and everything. But that whole thing didn't sit right to me. That seems so anti-Star Trek to me, to for the command track people to be looking down on their fellow officers and stuff like that, as if there's a class system.
Right. I don't think it's saying that command track ensigns are looking down on people. I think it's saying that those particular ensigns were looking down on others.
Yeah.
It was more character specific.
Yeah. Prior to DS9, I would have agreed with you, but Deep Space Nine took Star Trek out of allegory and made it real. And has been ever since. And so ever since Deep Space Nine stopped Star Trek from being an idealized version of what people could be, we've had to deal with real human foibles in Star Trek. And I think this is just that. They're on the worst ship in the fleet with delusions of grandeur. And just the fact that they look up to Boimler
because
he was on the Titan. Yeah, he was on the Titan for a couple weeks. I did like the line where they said that Riker cleans his trombone so much it's disruptive.
Well, I like when he said, I've got to blow some brass. Like
the title of the episode is a reference to an online game called Among Us that my daughter plays.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, really? And see, I went immediately to the Road Warrior. Lord Humongous, just walk away. Leave the tanks, leave the gas, and just walk away.
Oh, the guy with the hockey mask on his face? Yeah.
Well, but the whole thing was that they had a spy on board and all that kind of stuff. And that's what this game is about. You have one player that is sus, and you're trying to figure out which one is sus. You know, my daughter.
That's where sus came from. I hear that so much and I don't know where. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I knew that, but I've never played the game. So
I've never played it, but I've seen my daughter playing it. She's addicted to it.
I had no idea that sus came from. I
didn't either.
It's short for suspect.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I figured that much out. I just assumed that it was, a slang shortening of the word. Not that it came from a particular thing. It just happened.
But hey, also we're on top of all the trends, you know. Last week, you know, Scott said yeet.
Oh yeah.
Well, also that just shows how long it takes to make these shows. Back when this show was written, that game was the shit. Nobody's talking about it anymore. Except like my 10-year-old daughter mentioned it once.
I saw a picture of a bunch of people at Dragon Con dressed as the little aliens.
Yeah, they were. It was weird. God, the cosplay this year. Let me just tell you, so many Lokis.
Alligator Loki was all over the place. I saw that on the video.
Oh, yeah. There was a few alligator Lokis. Oh, yeah. I mean, there was so many Lokis. Even some of the actual guests dressed as a Loki. It was
the one that I saw that I thought was great was it was a guy and he was dressed as Gandalf, but his beard, it was white, but it was cut in the style of Macho Man, Randy Savage. And instead of a staff, he had a giant Slim Jim.
I saw him in
the wrapper.
I did see him.
And on his back, it had like the wrestlers had their names on the back, and it said Macho Mandolph.
Yeah.
On the back of
I saw him.
Step into a bell rug.
You should not pass.
All right, so there was a Kazinti character that we've seen him before. We saw him in that episode of Mugatu Gamato.
He's been in the mess hall a few times.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but he actually spoke in this episode, and they were introduced in the original. I mean, in the animated series back, and they slumped over when they walked, and in this episode they referenced that he has bad posture. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where the Kazinti come from?
I do.
The animated series.
Well, the animated series, but there was actually the guy who wrote the episode had a novel that the characters were in, and he was allowed to use them in the Star Trek universe because he wrote the episode. And so they become, Larry Niven.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to be careful when you do that, because when you do that, now those characters belong to Star Trek.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
He originally wrote a whole Dalek situation in his novels.
So
the TAS episode was the slaver weapon, which is out of his. Oh, I don't remember the name of the series. I haven't read it, but he wrote the episode and he put his characters, and the slaver weapon is from his universe as well in there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that established the Kazinti as a Star Trek race, and they were never used again until now.
And I suspect he's probably not writing any more of those novels, so they can.
He's still alive, right? Is he still writing?
He is still alive. He was born in 1938.
Oh, wow. So he's like a million years old.
He is currently. He doesn't show. But I mainly know his Ringworld stuff.
Ringworld is a great. Is it a series or is it just one book? I can't remember. I know I read.
It's one book, but he eventually did a sequel like way later. But it was initially just one book.
Also, he did some really good work with Jerry Purnell. Like Lucifer's Hammer is one of the best books I ever read. Larry Niven and Jerry Purnell.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
It's about, a comet hits the Earth, a big ass comet hits the Earth, mm-hmm. and it's all about the aftermath of it. And it's incredible. And when I was reading it, it was funny because I had just finished the book and we had a relatively near miss with a big ass asteroid right after I finished reading the book. I mean, it was out past the orbit of the moon. It wasn't even remotely close, but it was closer than, you know, billions of miles. And it freaked me out because I had just finished reading this. I mean, it's like this thick. It's a huge ass book, mm-hmm. but it's a really good book. Did Niven write The Integral Trees? Am I remembering right?
I don't remember.
That one I'm going to have to look up, because if so, that's a really good.
Okay, it says right here. Niven has written 3 scripts for science fiction TV series, Land of the Lost, Star Trek, the anime series, and The Outer Limits. There you go. He's written 3 scripts, not 2.
Yes,
not
The
1.
Integral Trees is Larry Niven, and it's so good. The premise is you've got this system where there's a torus of atmosphere. So it's not a terrestrial system. It's just a system where you've got an atmosphere that's in a torus around the star, mm-hmm. and in that torus are trees that are like, you know, hundreds of thousands of kilometers long, and cultures and life forms have all grown up around these trees. And so you've got beings that have basically evolved in zero or no gravity and they fly around. I don't even remember what the stories were because I read these back in the 80s. But I just remember they were really, really good. Larry Niven is one of the science fiction greats. And the fact that he essentially donated his characters to Star Trek, because, you know, I'm sure he got paid to write the episode, but I don't imagine he's still getting royalties on the Kzinti, although he may very well be. I don't know.
No, actually, a little bit of trivia. Did you know there's actually a magic card named after him?
A what?
A magic card. You know, the magic card, the Magic the Gathering card game?
Yeah.
There's a card named after him, but his name's spelled backwards. It's a Niven-Yarrell's disc is what it's called. It's from the original set. It's an artifact. We're like, wait, is that Larry Niven spelled backwards? Yeah, it is.
But I highly recommend any of his books. He's, you know, really, really good author.
We do have to mention the scene at the end with Armus. So
yes, we do.
They have a device that in the anomalies that for reasons it lets you talk to somebody on any planet, and because why not, you know? And so they use it to prank call Armus and just make fun of him, get him all worked up, and he's young. I am Armus. I am the skin of evil. I will kill you by waving my hand. You know. And it was funny. I mean, it was pretty funny.
I actually did laugh at that. I will agree. I laughed at that. I was like, wait, is that? No. Can't. Okay.
Well, as soon as she said, let's prank call Armus, I was like, all right.
Well, I'd forgotten his name. I just remembered him as that,
He was named, the thing was named after one of the producers.
Yeah, on TNG. I know. Yeah.
His name is Armus.
Mm-hmm. Burton Armus.
It would have been funny if that shuttlecraft has still been crashed behind him.
That was a missed opportunity. They should have put it there. But regardless, the whole thing made me sad.
Why?
I've always, ever since I was 9 years old. No, wait, 8 years old. Sorry. I've always felt that the character of Armus was an unexplored, missed opportunity antagonist with a lot of potential for return appearances. There's so much that could have been done with that character after Skin of Evil, and we never ever heard from him again. And the first time that we hear anything about the character since 1988 is in a joke final scene before the credits, which makes it very, very clear that nothing serious is ever going to happen with that character. He's never coming back, ever. Except in this one joke. So it put the final nail in the coffin for me. I'm going to have to put away my dreams of Armus becoming a new Khan. That being a one-episode television villain that comes back in a bigger capacity and becomes a major foe.
I always wanted Picard to put a photon torpedo into Armus.
He didn't. He just left him there. That's what he said. I was like, I'm going to leave you here to I'm going to make you suffer is essentially what he did.
But I'm not taking you anywhere.
Right.
And then, yes, he torpedoed the shuttlecraft to make sure that there was no way that Armus could get anywhere. Mm-hmm. But he did not torpedo Armus himself, probably because there's still that Starfleet part of him that says, we shouldn't murder.
Even though he killed one of my crew, you know.
But yeah, Armus was one of the two major Easter eggs in the episode. The other one was the Peklids calling Freeman Janeway.
Janeway, which I was like, wait, she looks nothing. Okay.
Yeah, and she kept correcting them and they still continue to call her Janeway.
Yeah.
Is anyone else getting fed up with Freeman's constant quest to be recognized or to
oh yeah, I mean,
protect a record? I thought that they finally was just like too much tonight.
Yeah, that's why I think it's gonna become an increasing problem. I think it's gonna like put the ship in danger by the end of the season. They keep leaning on it. Once or twice it's a little gag, but I think they've hit a note of that every episode this season.
Yeah.
Which tells me there's a reason for it. They're laying that as a seed. That's going to be something like we're on the penultimate episode, her need to be recognized, her need to, I don't want to call it, you know, to get some glory, but it's good shorthand. I think that's going to end up putting people at risk by the end of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some foreshadowing for sure.
Some people might also call this an Easter egg. This is a dialogue Easter egg, in that they're reviving a bit of the Temerian language as Ramdar goes float past the window. When Kayshan sees him throughout the window, all you hear is Shaka.
Yeah, I was glad to see Kayshan actually say something in this episode. He hasn't spoken since the episode where he was introduced.
I was starting to worry that maybe this was a bad purchase.
I did get a kick out of
it's getting redeemed.
And this is probably because of my occupation, but the whole time the red shirts, whenever they were on screen, they were very, very strongly backlit.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. Okay.
And it was enough that I was like, boy, they're really leaning into this a lot. Mm-hmm.
And some people would call that an Easter egg as well, Rick, with Boimler being severely backlit and then the Galaxy class bridge.
Yeah, that was cool.
Appears around him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. That was that was an Easter egg too. You're right.
I don't know if I could call that an Easter egg. It wasn't exactly hidden. It was just,
they didn't call attention to it. So if you didn't know it was a Galaxy class bridge, you wouldn't know it was probably wouldn't catch it.
That. And also we have finally reached the age or the era where, if it's a reference to something recognizable, then it's an Easter egg and it goes on your list in your YouTube video of 56 yeah. Easter eggs that you missed in this episode. No,
maybe I've been avoiding those like
yeah, me too.
The plague lately. Cause they're almost always stupid.
If you've been on an Easter egg hunt lately, they don't hide the eggs anymore. They just leave them laying out. Kids just walk up and pick them up.
And speaking of Boimler with that speech that he gave, something else that I noticed that might end up evolving as the season continues. When I don't know if they named all the red shirts that he was working with, but the human female, the brunette.
Yeah, I don't think she got a name.
As she is describing to Boimler, you know, what captains are. They're leaders, they're warriors, they're lovers. And she gives Boimler a bit of a look when she says that, and Boimler visibly reacts to that. Yeah. Then at the end of the episode, she essentially asks Boimler on a date.
Hmm.
I am really curious if we're going to see her showing up again with Boimler as the season moves on.
I didn't catch that.
Well, just, they give her a name. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's these little threads that they plant that could grow into something else.
I think her name was Jennifer.
That was the Andorian.
Oh, okay. Well,
Jennifer's Castro. We've seen her a couple times.
There's another one named Castro. Casey was the dude with the 5 o'clock shadow. But yeah. the human woman and the Kazinti, as far as I, they did not get named.
They had a Jennifer, they had a Castro, and that's the only ones. I'm looking at IMDb. I do see that the Queen Packlet was voiced by Brian Posehn. I didn't realize that.
Who's that?
He's a comedian. He's one of those comedians that if you saw his face, you'd know exactly who it was.
Like, oh, that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like Casey sounded familiar to me, and I looked him up, and he's one of those, that guy. I couldn't tell you offhand what it was, but I saw it. I was like, oh, okay, that's why
I recognized his voice right off. But Brian Posehn, I saw him in the credits. I couldn't recognize where his voice was in the show. Rick, think The Mandalorian. I can't remember what season it was, but he's on like an ice planet and he needs someone to give him a ride on a speeder to get like to or from the ship. And Brian Posehn was the driver of the, okay, here it comes.
Oh, Okay. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, all right. That guy. Okay.
Yeah.
He's kind of like this era's, oh shit. No, I can't remember his name. He was in Ice Pirates as the head.
No, that's a different
actor. No, I know it's a different guy, but that dude was like, he was behind the scenes on a lot of stuff in the 80s.
Yeah, he's this generation's
Bruce Valanche. That's what I'm thinking of. Bruce Valanche.
My favorite Brian Posehn character. He was on Big Bang Theory a lot, but he used to play on Just Shoot Me. And the guy that just recently passed that played on the Goldbergs, the old guy, you know what I'm talking about?
Ed Asner?
No,
he wasn't on the Goldbergs, no.
You're talking sitcoms. So
he used to play on Just Shoot Me, and he was like the guy in charge of the magazine, and he was in the elevator with Brian Posehn's character, and he said something about, I think I have a fever. And Brian Posehn's standing there, he's got his arms full of something. He just leans over and kisses him on his forehead and says, yeah, you might. And he's just as the elevator doors are closing, he says, salty.
Oh, God. Oh, okay. Yeah.
We have reached the end of our discussion. Do you want to hear more? Well, head over to patreon.com/infinitepotato to learn how you can become a supporter of our show and help us with things like recording services and equipment. We offer you early access to episodes and special monthly movie commentaries. This month, we're going to be watching The Room, and that will be hitting the site at the end of the month. So we have various tiers of support. If you join our mid or our top tier, you'll be thanked on the show and credited as a producer. And I'd like to take a minute and thank our producers of this episode, Dale Goodall, Bulent Bingall, Jeff Hughes, Tom Corcoran, and Brandon Ushio. So I want
to. Everybody had to have an all at the end of their name just to keep the rhyme scheme going.
All right. I want to thank everybody for being here. Scott, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you?
People can often find me on this show as well as Cosmic Potato, the Superfan Talk podcast, and occasionally on Captain Game Show. All of those right here on the Infinite Potato Alliance podcast network. And coming soon, I will be putting together and releasing season one of I'd Watch That for a Dollar, my upcoming podcast, where I sit down with fun guests and we review movies that I purchased at my local dollar store on DVD and Blu-ray. Production is underway. I want to have most, if not all, the first season in the can before I start releasing. Otherwise, you get one episode and then you wait 3 months for another one. And that's no good for anybody. And if you don't want to wait for me to come out with a new podcast and you want to see some of my stuff, then go ahead and visit my website, www.planetrisecreative.com. You can see a bunch of my graphic artwork, like posters and wallpapers and social media avatars and book covers and et cetera. If the website is too much work, then just go ahead and hit up Twitter at Planet Rise.
That reminds me, Scott, Rick and Jen, you guys are more than welcome to join in on this, but we're going to start a series for the show where Scott and I are going to read the next generation post Nemesis novels and talk about them. Scott, I was going to let you know that I have contacted Dayton Ward and he is okay to be on the show.
Nice.
Jen, thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thank you for having me as always.
You have anything you want to plug?
Well, you know, I'm on this show. I'm on Cosmic Potato. I am on Starbase 66, occasionally on Captain Game Show. Starbase 66, we're getting ready to do another interview coming up soon. I'm not going to tell you who because that'll spoil. But we'll eventually do some more episodes with that. Right, Rick?
Sure, why not? So, I don't even know who the hell she's talking about. Actually, right. I do, but I can't remember.
Yeah,
it's Peter David.
It's not Peter David. I will say
somebody that y'all know, but I don't. So.
It's Steve Guttenberg.
No.
All right, Rick. Thank you for being here. Let everybody know where they can find you.
No.
Okay.
I don't want to be found. I'm all over the network, folks. You know where to find me. So if you don't know where to find me, I envy you that.
All right. If you want to get in touch with us and give us your thoughts on this episode, then head over to infinitepotato.com and click on the icon for that Star Trek podcast. And you'll find links to our Facebook page, our Twitter page, and our email. We'll be back next week to talk about the next episode of Lower Decks, which is as yet untitled. Until then, Rick, go clean out the airlock. Scott did something unspeakable in there.
Don't get digested.
I do what I want.